Oh, that's right. We're right here this afternoon. One of my favorite guests is right here with us. We have Dr. Joseph Patton. He got the Palmetto Lifetime Award here back in December, I think it was. He's been there at Gleams for many years. He's the chief executive officer there. Certainly brought Gleams to a standard that is pretty amazing. And he continues to do good things in our community. It's my great pleasure to say, sitting across from me this afternoon is Dr. Joseph D. Patton. How you doing today, Dr. Joe?
And I'm doing well, and thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I couldn't think of a better person to come and talk about that today. Today is actually the birthday of Martin Luther King.
Absolutely.
And so, happy birthday, Martin Luther King. That's right. There'll be celebrations. And, of course, he is, I understand, one of two Americans who was not an elected official to have his own holiday. I didn't realize that, but, yeah, that's true.
Thank you. I just realized that, too, recently.
Yeah. So, from the standpoint of what it took for that holiday to come through, that was pretty awesome. And so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how that came together. But we're also going to talk about just some of the things that are going on. You know, Dr. Patton, how are things over at Gleams?
Things are well, as usual. We are, you know, in the business of helping people to help themselves. And a lot of people wonder, you know, why are you handing out money to pay folks' light bill and medical bills and so forth? But there's a group of people that fall through the cracks that DSS can't help, or they don't quite meet the criteria for help. And if Gleams wasn't where it is, then those people would be over at the county courthouse and everywhere else trying to get some assistance, because they literally don't have the wherewithal to take care of their subsistence. Mm-hmm. So we are there to help them. And, of course, we have problems, too. There's people who abuse the system and the whole bit. But it's up to us to weed them out. But the main thing is to help these people to help themselves through economic development, through education, and to get them so that they're self-sustaining and train them for jobs and get them employed. We do all of that at Gleams.
You know, I think a lot of people don't realize that over there.
Maybe they don't.
You know, but it really is an amazing. And I tell you what, when you go over there to the Brewer Complex where you're at, I mean, it really is. You've done a nice job.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. We work at it every day. And we want Gleams to be an agency, a social service agency that the citizens of the 10 or 12 counties we serve will be very proud of and can say that we gave them a helping hand and helped them get to where they are.
You know, and I think that's always what we would like to see in society. We want people to go on and make their own successes.
Yeah.
We don't really want people to be on subsistence or to have this for a long period of time. They need the education, and they need to get out there and find their own path.
You know, somewhere along the line, it was instilled in me as I grew up, one of the things that I think about a lot, and the same philosophy that Martin King had, and so did President Lyndon Johnson, he said that there'll always be poor people among us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and somewhere I read, inasmuch as you help the least of these, you know.
Yes.
I mean, that's something that I've read over the years, and I think it's almost immoral and actually unconscionable not to extend assistance to those that are less fortunate, for as long as the reason for them being falling in hard times, or on hard times, is not something that they have done themselves to put themselves in that predicament by doing something illegal or
sure,
something that you and I wouldn't even think of, then I think we owe it to the least of these.
Sure.
To extend a hand. And Dr. King believed in that. It was all about, you know, it was all about poor people. It just wasn't about black people. That's hard to explain to folks nowadays, because back when the situation came up about making a holiday available to folks for Dr. King, a lot of people from another persuasion kept saying, why would you create a holiday for this man when all of the hell that he caused across the country and the unrest and the turbulence and stuff? It wasn't about that. And he's just for black folks. He wasn't for black people.
I think that is something that people don't
think about. No, he was for poor people. He just wanted everybody to have a chance.
Yeah, and I think the idea of service to your community, service sure. to your country, were very, very important to him, too.
It was, and that's all I've ever done, is worked in a situation where I've tried to help folks, and it's been rewarding to me. I ain't by any means a Martin Luther King, nor can I even attempt to think that I could put myself in that arena.
Right.
But on the other hand, he has certainly inspired me, along with a lot of other people that we can name, namely Dr. Benjamin E. Mays. Because if there had not been Mays, there would have not been a Martin King. Martin went down to Morehouse to be a lawyer.
Right.
And on Tuesdays, he would go to an assembly on Tuesday morning where President Mays would deliver a message right. to his student body. And Martin was so impressed with the message that he would ask questions afterwards. And Mays would say, and I read this,
okay.
I quote, go to my office, young man, and I'll be over there shortly. And they would continue the conversation. And he was very inquisitive about also the Gandhi philosophy that Mays responded to also.
Mm-hmm.
And Mays convinced him that theology is where you ought to go. If you want to make a difference in this world, you can't lose. You put God and Jesus on your side.
Right.
According to Mays.
Right.
Then, you know, you got the power pushing you and helping you to influence. But now it still took more man than I am because knowing back in those days, in the early 60s, and segregation was enforced pretty good, what the end results might be. You might have to offer the supreme sacrifice, and that he did. So
he did.
It's hard to find somebody that was willing to put themselves out there to that point.
You know, speaking of that, we're going to hear a quick word from our sponsors. But
sure.
when we come back, I want to talk about what Martin Luther King would be thinking about today, and because we have situations erupting all over our country, so I think
yeah.
that'll be an interesting topic, plus a whole lot more. Hey, if you've got a question for Dr. Joe Patton, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be back after this word.
Gold. Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here at Sharp Facets Gallery in my studio. I am talking with Dr. Joe Patton, and he, of course, is the executive director over there at Gleams, chief executive officer, and mm-hmm. he took some time out on Martin Luther King's birthday to talk to us about Martin Luther King, but also the situations that we're dealing with today. And, you know, when we went to the break, I said when we'd come back, we'd talk about what Martin Luther King might if he was here with us today, what he would be thinking and what he would be watching and observing. You know, we talked about off the air a few minutes ago how Martin Luther King was just in the right place at the right time in history, and that if it had been 10 years earlier or 10 years later, things might have not turned out as well as far as his role in the segregation issues. Right?
I mean, absolutely, yeah. absolutely. There's no question about it. It wouldn't have turned out because there had been a flip-the-script type philosophy.
Yeah.
The younger people aren't nearly as patient. King was a very patient man.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that he chose to follow him also were of that same virtue. So it would not have been, and previous to to has been coming on the scene. That was a group of people that were absolutely positive that they were going to stop the movement in terms of integration. And so there again, we would have wind up in a situation where there had been a Mexican standoff, so to say. You know, and so Cain hit it at the right time, and his philosophy of nonviolence, for instance, fit right in to where people could at least partially accept this.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And what he wanted was equality for people. And in some of his speeches, he talks about in every village and every hamlet, you know, he wanted everybody to be included in the movement. It wasn't just black people. He wanted better opportunities for people. He wanted better educational opportunities. He wanted economical opportunities for folks. And he was patient. And the way that he wanted to get there was to be ever visible.
Right.
With his supporters.
Sure.
And that caused, you know, you can be a, it's hard for you to stand a bunch of people up in a room and determine who's Catholic and who's Protestant.
Right.
But then there's no problem in determining a Chinese person from a white person or someone, because that's a visible type minority. So you have to pay attention to that.
Right.
And that's what Cain wanted to do, was to lead his cadre forward so that the country would know there's a certain group of people that are educated, who don't mean any harm and don't want to cause problems, but all we want is a piece of the American dream. That's all he wanted.
And today we have a situation, not only from a terrorist end of things, but also in the relationships that are happening with the Fergusons, the New York City, some of these episodes that are happening. I think a lot of people are concerned where this is going. And, you know, my question to you is, where would King be on all these issues?
Well, you know, when it'd be like he lost his life in Memphis. It was the garbage man,
mm-hmm,
that were being treated. They had somebody that had been killed in the back of a garbage truck because of the inclement weather or something, and they had to take cover in that truck.
Mm-hmm.
And they called Dr. King, and he moved his entourage of supporters, Ambassador Andrew Young, as we know him now, and Abernathy and Jesse Jackson. He took them all up to Memphis. But they had several meetings to strategize their approach when they got to Memphis.
Sure.
And, of course, in its embryo stage, when they first got there at the Lorraine Motel, King was gunned down before they had the opportunity. But right now, for instance, if he were called with reference to the Ferguson issue, King would put together some of the best minds he could find in a think tank. And go over this data and look at every particular little incident that has taken place,
mm-hmm,
and issue a statement and go and confront the authorities there and bring about, again, that visible minority. He'd bring that entourage with him and try to say, this is what we need to do, not just out there grandstanding like some of our leaders today. They just seize the opportunity. Something happens in Wounded Knee up there, and 5 hours later, you see somebody showing up out there in front of the microphone who don't even understand what's happening out in Wounded Knee.
Mm-hmm.
But they seize the opportunity to gain some notoriety for them. It's all about self. Cain didn't. It wasn't about self. Look here, the man offered, He gave the supreme sacrifice, his life.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
For what he believed in.
Well, I don't know, but I think you might have been referring to Al Sharpton there.
Yeah, I was. Al shows up everywhere. And there's nothing wrong with Al as a preacher.
Okay.
You know, and then basically when I look at him, especially since he's lost all that weight, I kind of think he I admire the man because I'm kind of rotund to myself, and it takes a minute to lose weight like that. But on the other hand, in losing weight, I think sometimes you lose a grasp on reality, and just going out there you can shoot somebody with a BB gun in Miami, and Al Sharpton will show up down there. You know, I mean, he'll show up down there and I'm not too sure it's to help the situation, but he shows up.
It seems to become more incited.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
And that's what
You know, he's got people that follow him that do certain things that when he shows up, I think he agitates the system more than anything.
And I guess the biggest difference in Martin Luther King is that, as you said, he would develop a plan. And you were talking about him going to see President Johnson.
Johnson, that's right.
And what?
There
was
were two
the
fellas. There were two fellas outside, and one of the Johnson aides went in and said, "Mr. Johnson, Mr. President, there are two men out there to see you from the Civil Rights Movement." Mm-hmm. He said, "One of them is Martin King, and the other one is Malcolm X." And Johnson said, in his vernacular, "Send that King fella in." He said he didn't want to deal with X, because he felt that he wouldn't be able to make sense
right
to Malcolm X, because Malcolm was after another. He was cut from another piece of cloth, and it was not the nonviolent piece, and he would have had a hard time in a conversation with somebody whose philosophy was so much different than his own. And Johnson, believe it or not, he created the Civil Rights Act. Well, not only the Civil Rights Act, but he created these community actions agencies and so forth. Between he and Sergeant Shriver, mm-hmm. You know, they created that to help poor people. He was very socially minded. He said that you might not like it, but it's going to happen. You might as well get on the bandwagon and help us get it done, because this integration is going to happen. He said, we ain't going to have a whole lot to do with it. And the best thing we can do is not fight it.
Now, you were growing up in that period.
Yes, I was.
You were in the 60s.
Yes, I was. I was in the Army.
Right.
And I was in college. They were having demonstrations, sit-ins, stand-ins at the movie theaters. I was at Knoxville College up in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting a call from my mother, who was a school teacher. She told me, "Don't you get in that, boy, because I teach school for a living, and they see you on the 6 o'clock." Edward R. Murrow used to be the newsman.
Right. That was back in the dark ages.
It was. So they see you on there with Edward R. Murrow, they see, you know how they focus on the students.
Right.
Excuse me, I could lose my job. And, of course, I didn't understand all of that as a student, but I was raised in a household with a mother and father, and I was taught to be obedient. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get in that. You know,
right.
I kind of, when they were getting the buses up, loaded up to go out to stand in at those theaters and sit in at those counters, I didn't go. I kind of hid to keep from going. But later on,
how did other people feel about you, though, the fact that you didn't go?
Well, I was ostracized a lot about that and talked about and called different kinds of names. But my upbringing and my mother's wishes were, to me, much stronger, because when it was all said and done, they were paying the tuition mm-hmm. for me to be up there. I didn't have no scholarship. And secondly, when I finished with a semester at Knoxville College, I had to go home. And chances are, if I had been a failure in college period, the only place I had to go was home. So I had to try to do what my mother and father wanted me to do, and that's not being involved. Yeah, I've always been somebody to march to my own drum.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, look here, there's nothing wrong with following the crowd. Mm-hmm. But I was raised, as you and I discussed before, I went to a military academy when I was 12 years old. So they taught me, you think for yourself. You know, you're responsible for you. And if you do that well, you're going to be responsible for several other people that's standing up here with you.
Yeah, that is one thing about the military, isn't it?
Yep.
Absolutely. Hey, I'm here with Dr. Joe. Let's join the news in progress. We'll be right back. Hey, if you got a question, give us a call. 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. Sharp Facets Gallery on the 72 bypass between Bank of America and Burger King. We are here with Dr. Joe Patton this afternoon. Just talking about the fact that today, which is January 15th, is the actual birthday, and you couldn't be with us on Monday, so you agreed to be able to come with us today. And so we're having an interesting conversation about Martin Luther King, how he did what he did, how he was able to accomplish the things that he accomplished, and also looking at, I worry that in some aspects we may be going backwards, Dr. Joe. What do you think?
I think so, too. And I think it's because there's no structure for our young people. And we're not setting the right examples. When I say the right examples, we aren't setting examples for them. We're so busy trying to grab that piece of American dream ourselves till we have forgotten that there's some people in the galleries that's watching us that are looking to us for leadership.
And they're called the children.
Yeah, they're the children.
Right.
And you know, in order to have a society that's strong, you know, we have to go back to where you start indoctrinating children and working with their minds at 3, 4, and 5 years old and getting them headed in the right direction and not just hanging out being, even our movies and things, the television programs, having the stuff that I see on the television is not worth my children looking at, but my children are grown at this point.
Sure.
But when they were young, we censored what was on that television, and we didn't let them watch anything because I didn't want them to form ideas in their heads that they could do some of that stuff in my house and live with me. I mean, they had to conform to a very stringent discipline. And it wasn't that I was some kind of Attila the Hun or something. It was just that, you know, if you're going to exist in my household, then your mother and I call the shots in here.
Sure.
And when you're old enough to provide your own place to live, your own automobile, your own food, and a family of your own, then you can do whatever you please. I won't be coming to your house.
Well, you know, and that goes to the fact, isn't it, the first survey that has ever come out has now showed there's more single-family households than two-parent households ever that we've ever had in society.
It's not good. We are going backwards. Because it was even during the baby boomer years, or back during when the hippies were around and people were living together, there still was a mother and a father in a household.
Right.
You know, nowadays, there's single households, and there's several people who are saying, I just want to have a child on my own. And it's very hard economically for one person to maintain a household.
It is difficult, but it's also about getting different perspectives and where we come from on things. It's good to have a couple of perspectives in the household. It's good to have these discussions, we will do this, we won't do this.
I agree.
And if you don't have that, then you're losing out. And then as a child grows, you and I were talking about this, the household becomes the structure for the household. And then and when they go off to school, they've got the school structure, but they've already learned somewhat by living in a structure. Mm-hmm. And then as they get out into school and into the community and into a job, they realize that there is, shall we say, a hierarchy. Mm-hmm. Somebody's always going to be in charge. Mm-hmm. And it may be them, and it may not be them.
In the military, they have a saying that any time there's more than one person, somebody's in charge. Now, they go by date of rank, who's the highest ranking person. They even go by birth date. They can get ridiculous. Or they can get ridiculous. Who got the biggest feet or something? Yeah, I mean, there's a measurement there that they can put somebody in charge of the other person's action. You know, it's called seniority in the military.
Right.
And as long as you walk the face of this earth, you know, it's going to be, you'll never be in a place where there's not an authority. Not in this country. It won't happen.
Correct.
And you got to understand, you know, when to fight and when not to fight. And some things... Nowadays, young people don't give it much thought. If they don't want to do it, they just say, look, we're going to resist this.
Well, it kind of goes to the issue with the police.
Exactly.
You know, if the policeman tells you we're going to take you in, I guess you better just go and sort it out once you get there.
My philosophy, exactly. You obey first and protest later.
Obey first and protest later. I like it.
Because if you don't obey...
You won't have the opportunity to protest later.
You ain't got nothing to protest. You didn't do what was required of you to do.
Right.
So what are you going to complain about? I mean, you didn't do it. And then, and some children, like one of my sons, recognized at an early age, if I told him to have his car home at midnight, and he didn't, one night he came in at 2:30 in the morning.
Okay.
And I was standing in the window looking to see when he was going to come home. I was worried. But when I saw the headlights pull up in the driveway, I ran and got into bed so he wouldn't know that I was concerned. He walked in the house. I had told him that you're going to lose your automobile. I'm going to take it for 60 days. Mm-hmm. He came in the house, came into my bedroom, put his car keys on my nightstand, and went upstairs and got in his bed. He made up his mind sometime around midnight that he was going to stay out to 2:30 for whatever he was doing. But he was going to give up that car. He understood.
The penalty was okay for the advantage he had at 12 o'clock that
night.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's what the young people are doing now. You know, it's a badge of courage and honor to get locked up.
I don't see how you can say that, but I guess so.
I get it from the street. I get it from young folks. That's a benchmark, you know, and that's reaching for lack of another term, you're reaching a ladder, a step toward being the man, the big man out on the hood, which don't mean nothing.
But no, it doesn't.
But it starts way back. A lot of these TV movies and things have made a dope dealer on the street, the big man, the kids come around him like he's a candy man or something, you know.
Well, that's kind of like all the stars, isn't it?
Yeah,
the Hollywood stars. We put more emphasis on our Hollywood stars, and when they do all these questionnaires out there, the kids can always tell you who the Hollywood stars are. They might not be able to tell you who the president, the vice president,
right,
these type of things, but they can tell you that because that's more interesting.
And I'm telling you now, if Dr. Martin Luther King, if he were here, walking this earth today, Dr. King would be appalled at this. I don't know if he could muster a team now. It's gotten so far. I don't know that he could have impact on these children. I talk to them now when I go to schools and make speeches and so forth. The little kids, I know what they're thinking. They're saying, well, they agree with me when I'm standing there. And then when I leave, they're saying, Well, that's an old man. He's still living in his time.
They do kind of do that, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, you're no longer relevant, right? Mm. I mean, I think that is one of the things. And you know, I've thought about this as people age and everything, and I've heard this said so many times. I just don't feel relevant anymore. That's sad to hear.
That's true. Except in my own household.
In your own household?
Yeah, my sons. Come home, I got four boys and a girl. When they come home to my house, you know, I tell them, either we all are adults and we're friends, but there's certain things I can't do with you, because if the ship flips on its side, I'm responsible to write the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't do it without your assistance if you don't have respect for my leadership. So there's certain things we can't do together, because I still have to maintain the position of the father. And that's because I had a father.
Mm-hmm.
It was in my household, and he was sharp. But the ladies in my household were very intelligent women. They were school principals and stuff. My daddy didn't have a leg to stand on sometimes. I mean, them women ran that household, so I came from a matriotic society.
Mm-hmm.
But when he showed up, they gave him credit for being daddy and made sure we respected the fact that he was daddy.
That's important.
It is important. And he did all he could do to let us know, or to impart to me some manly habits and things that I need to be concerned with, and they stuck with me to the day. So that's where we missed the boat, and Dr. King would have a hard time turning some of that around.
When we come back, we're going to be talking about the future. We'll talk a little bit more about Martin Luther King,
And
we are here with Dr. Joe Patton. Don't you go away. Got a question? Give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Layaway. We've done it for over 30 years here at Sharp Facets Gallery. So whether it's Christmas, a birthday, an anniversary, or just because, we know layaway every day. Come see us today at Sharp Facets Gallery. Need more info? Call us, 229-6613. That's 229-6613.
Oh, that's right. Right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, right here in my studio for WCRS. 4:50 in the afternoon, actually 4:51 in the afternoon, coming up close to that 5 o'clock hour.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have a lot of time left here. But in thinking back about the times that we lived in back when Martin Luther King was doing his pastoring and going forth and doing good things in our country, and then comparing them to today, it certainly seems like we should be moving forward more instead of the potential of going back. Don't you agree?
I think so. I think it does look like that. And and I'm really, really, really concerned that we are going back and not forward. You know, somewhere along the line, we as adults have sidestepped a responsibility to guide society in the right direction. We allow so many things to happen. For instance, this social media thing that they got out, you know.
Yeah, Facebook, et cetera.
Yeah. We allow that to exist. And it's because we think people have certain individual freedoms and rights, and you do,
right,
as long as they don't infringe on what's mine.
Correct.
You know, I mean, your freedom stops where mine begins. But we let people say anything, they come on, they talk about, and they're ugly. They say bad things.
They are. They're very ugly.
And
yes,
they post bad things on Facebook with no regard for the person's feelings of what that they're writing about or talking about.
I think they feel emboldened because they're not actually talking to the person.
Yeah.
They're just spewing it out there, and they feel free to do it.
Well, there's something, you know, you can always say bad things about people when you don't have to say it directly to them.
Right.
You know, you put it out there and let folks read it and form their own opinion, but you can influence that opinion.
Well, then that, I think, emboldens other people to say things.
Yes. Yeah,
you know, and it becomes a whole thread, they call it.
It does.
Yeah.
Now, Dr. King, if he were living today...
Would he have a Facebook page?
His organization probably would.
Okay.
And it would be up to him to post some of the... He would have been much more effective back when he was doing the March from Selma, for instance, and the... Mm-hmm. And the civil rights demonstrations, the nonviolence demonstrations. If he could have published what his philosophy was so that people could have access to it more than they did, he would have been more. But then again, if you set that up, then you've got that other crowd that's going to critique and rebut what you're putting out there is for the good of the cause.
Right.
So I'm not too sure that Facebook would have been of that much help.
A good medium for Dr. Martin Luther King.
Right.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been that for him. And today, Facebook is misused, I think.
Well, I think there's two sides of it. There's the side where you tell every inane thing that is happening in your life, which is more than what most people want to know about you.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
There's good things that can come out between supporting and doing for others or helping in a situation where somebody needs some help. There's good parts to that.
Also.
But then there is that other negative part where I don't like this, that, or the other about a person, so I think I'll just go ahead and set them straight. Put whatever I want out there and let it rip.
And that's what the young folks are doing. And us as parents, we're not doing anything to censor what's being done or said or put out there on Facebook.
Yeah, that's true.
If I had a youngster living in my household, he would have a certain time for computer time, and trust me, I'd be all involved in that. You know, I would take the time. Because a young child is forming an opinion about life and what's happening to him on a day-to-day basis. And sometimes his thinking, once he starts going to school, his thinking is influenced by an element that you and I would object to. And if that's the case, and it becomes a part of his thinking that he's going to put it out on Facebook, then he's forming a character that we can readily see. And that's when we should intervene and cut this off. This thing has gotten so bad now till it scares me when a policeman is out there and says, look, get out the car and put your hands up. And a kid gets out the car and tells the policeman, I'm not doing anything you asked me to do. Or reaches for something in his pocket. It might be a ballpoint pen. But all of that stuff could be avoided. You just get out the car and put your hands up like they ask you. That's the authority. You know, an authority is the way of life in this country.
Well, you know, we're coming up on the top of the hour, but, you know, how would you like to be young growing up in this world today? What do you think?
It wouldn't bother me, though. Again, with my upbringing and training, like I told you about those sit-ins and stuff in those schools.
Right.
When my parents told me, I got ridiculed to high hell about that. They used to come to me all the time and say, they even used some ugly kinds of things, you know, because I was of fair complexion and stuff, so they told me I was half white and this, that, and that, all kinds of stuff, because this was a predominantly black school. But I did what my parents wanted me to do. See, it didn't bother me what they thought about me. And I raised my sons like that, too. You know.
But
so,
I think it's got to be very difficult, and I'm sure even your sons today have, if they have children,
yep,
that it's difficult for kids growing up. Number one, they don't seem to be small kids anymore. They seem to grow so fast because of the Internet and because of the iPads and all the stuff that they have.
They grow fast.
And there's so much influence, and the technology just means that everything is moving so much faster. It has to be hard as a parent, and very hard as a single parent, to bring up a child with maybe the values that you and I grew up with.
Absolutely. We've lost the values. I mean, we don't instill them into our children anymore. I was looking at my grandson was here the other day, the little one. He's like 3 years old, one of them, and he spent the whole afternoon on his iPad. He's 3 years old.
3 years.
And I have a problem turning my iPad on.
That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
And he spent the whole afternoon, I mean, and telling his father, my son, where he was going on there and what he was looking at. I mean, they're much more advanced electronically and stuff than we were. So it's a different world now.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I wouldn't want to be growing up in today's world. Personally, I think that it would be very tough to be growing up in today's world and trying to make the right decisions to end up maybe where you thought you wanted to go.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true. And I still admire whatever it took for Martin King and Andrew Young and that crowd to stand up against insurmountable odds. They were odds that I thought would never, I didn't think that there'd never be a day. Because, see, I was a product. I grew up in the community. When we go in Montgomery Ward, for instance, and they had a white and black, white and colored, it said, water fountain.
Right.
And I drank some water out of the white fountain one time, and then later in there, the clerk snatched me up and slapped me.
For real?
And I really didn't want my mama. My mama was in the store. I didn't want my mama to know that, because that might have been all I wore.
Wow. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. So your mama never knew about it?
No, I never told her. I never told her. Even after I got grown, I didn't tell her that. But I knew what was happening. You knew your place, though. I knew I was wrong. Mm-hmm. So why go tell my mama? She might jump on that later, but she'd whip me, too, when I got home. Because I was wrong, you know. Mm-hmm. I was old enough to read the sign, and I knew better. You know, so it's back in those days, it was very difficult, and to fight that. I mean, you ain't talking about just one place. You're talking about every department store. You're talking about every filling station, every restaurant. You talking about anywhere you went, every church, it was all segregated.
So, but it's not that way anymore.
No, it's not.
It's not that way anymore.
Which is good.
Exactly.
But we as black people have lost in the integration because we had thriving avenues of black business. Mm-hmm. And once things were integrated,
yes.
Why should they go and stay in town and tourist motel when they can go stay in the Holiday Inn, which was much nicer. Mm-hmm. So we lost a lot of our economic value. The only real thriving black business that and this is my opinion now, somebody might call in and say I'm wrong, is the undertakers.
The undertakers. Well, you're right, today.
That's
today,
what I see now.
You're right.
Anything other than that, I mean, we used to go to our black barbers up the street and now we go to Sports Clips and some of these other places. And I mean, we don't have those thriving black businesses anymore. So we lost them. But you got to give up something to get what you want.
That's true.
That's life.
That is life. Well, Dr. Joe Patton, it is always a pleasure to sit down and talk with you. I really appreciate you coming out and talking about Martin Luther King. Any closing thought you'd like to leave us with?
And I appreciate you asking me over. I always feel grateful when you ask me to come for a chat with you on the air, because there's so many things I think about that we think about alike, and some we disagree on, but we're not going to get into that on the air. There's the one thought that I have is somewhere I read, and again, it said, inasmuch as you have done unto the least of these, he's done unto me. And I think that was Dr. King's philosophy. Let's help the poor. And I'm still in that business of trying to help the poor. And I think that everybody that's under the sound of my voice would listen to that and not be as selfish with what's yours and help someone else who's less fortunate.
I agree.
Then I think this will be a much better place. It'll cut out some of this competition that we've got. And we should spend more time educating our children. That's my thoughts.
I think you're right. Thanks so much for coming out today, Dr. Joe.
Thank you.
All right. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
It was good. Always. Call me anytime. I don't have something to contribute on a lot of subject matter, but when you run across something you think I can make a contribution, then call me.
Absolutely.
I'll be here. And I do appreciate that.
Well,
it worked. It worked. We talked a little bit of gibberish about a lot of things.
I think it had a common thread.
Yeah,
it goes in different directions to make the point of the
And right? We kept going back to Martin King.
Good show.
Was it a good show?
Good show.
I thought it was.
Did you get his other
name? No, he's gonna hold it for a day or two. Okay. He got something else he wants to do with it.
Oh, okay.
There's somebody calling me. Let me see who it is. It's probably my office. You know the board's gonna meet in a little while. I don't know who that 992-9501. Had no idea. Hello?